something's wrong. The Belgic Confession, a 400-year-old confession of faith in the Christian Reformed Church, says it this way: we believe that God created man, and that's the mankind word. But when he was in honor, he did not understand, he did not recognize, he did not appreciate what he had. But he subjected himself willingly to sin, death, and the curse, lending his ear not to listening to God, but to listening to a different voice. For he transgressed the commandment of life. What was the purpose of that command? You shall not eat from the tree that is in the middle of the garden. Not to punish Adam, but to what? Oh, thank you, but to protect him. And actually, I would even maybe use a stronger word, to free him. And the picture is one of a group of children on a playground. Picture with me. But the playground is set up on a plateau with cliffs around it. And there's no fence around the edge of this steep cliff around the playground. And the children are playing. And what do? With like no fence around the outside of that, they huddle in the middle because they're afraid to get to the edges for fear that they will go one step too far. But what happens when you put a really nice, strong schoolyard cyclone fence around that playground? The children are free to go all the way to the edge and play over the entire playground. Not to punish mankind, but to protect and provide for us was the reason he gave that commandment, as our confession says, that commandment of life which he had received. A good commandment, as we've already seen, in a good creation. But it's not just the fence that's important. Location, location, location is important. Because where is Adam when this conversation between the serpent and Eve is going on? He was on the other side of the garden taking care of business. He was, what does the text say? He was with her. Face to face with her, right there. And Dr. Larry Crabb's book, The Silence of Adam, is one of the great titles for a book about men and women, because it captures that moment when Adam was silent and didn't say anything. Because to whom in particular was the command given? We found last week in Genesis chapter 2, Adam. In Genesis 2. And who did God hold particularly responsible in Genesis chapter 3? Adam. Something is going on here, and Adam paid the price for being silent. What was that price? It was separation. Where did the sin come from? Was it something inside Eve from the beginning? She was good. But good doesn't mean, remember what we said before? Good doesn't mean fully capable of following God. They still had to subdue creation, even when it was good. That's why the church meets in congregational meetings. Because even though we're the church, we are new creations, we still have the command to subdue and organize, so we still have to meet and take care of some of the business sides of the church. That's why we do that. The problem was not that she still had to grow. The problem was that she listened to the serpent and not to God. She took some, she ate it, and being the sharing, kind woman that she was, some of our traditions have really messed this up, where they've said things like, well, Eve realized she was in trouble, so she had to entice Adam so he would join her in sin. No. This is simply Adam not speaking up. This is not Eve doing somehow being at fault for him eating it. This is Adam's sin, as we find again in Romans chapter 5. Where does the sin come from? Simply being in this world. Don't love this world or anything of it. It looked good. It was pleasing to the eye, good for food, and even good for gaining wisdom, the text said. That was one special tree. But we're not to love what God says we don't love. If anyone loves this world, the love of the Father is not in him. And I believe that's not just God's love isn't in me, but that's my love for God is not there. It has been replaced, it has been smashed by my love for the world. For everything in this world, the cravings of sinful man, the lust of the eyes, and the boasting of what he has and does, this is where maybe the old translation is a little better, the pride of life, which is, I think, a great way to say that, does not come from the Father, but it comes from being in this world. The world and its desires will, as Adam and Eve found, pass away. But the one who does the will of God ends up living forever. And then, into this new condition, God steps one more time. Now, the next time God steps this way into this new condition, we call it the incarnation. And we call it the Jesus event. But the Jesus event was not the first time that God stepped into this condition, this new sinfulness, this new, they thought it was open, but we know it was darkened condition for mankind. God stepped in at the very beginning. And as was his pattern, he meets with Adam and Eve in the garden to walk with them in the cool of the day. And he calls out because they're not there to welcome him. Where are you? Adam answers, I heard you in the garden and I was afraid, so I hid. He's already tried to hide from the woman. We find out that he's going to have to be separated from creation. But the most painful part of this fall was that he could not welcome God gladly into his place to be with God. The garden was the place God had given him to meet with him. That's what it was for. And he couldn't take advantage of the garden. He couldn't celebrate. He couldn't have that joy because something had changed. He was afraid. We know something's wrong because there is no fear in something had changed, right? And I love 1 John 4 at this point. There is no fear in love because perfect love, and again, I slip it in my old translation, because perfect love casts out fear. Something was wrong. A more contemporary confession in the Christian Reformed Church expresses it beautifully this way. When humans deface God's image, that's what happened when they ate the fruit, because they chose Satan's voice and not God's voice. When humans deface God's image, the whole world suffers. We abuse creation or we idolize it, and we are estranged from. This is an ominous list from our Creator, from our neighbor, from our true selves, and from all that God has made. We go from, remember Marc Chagall's painting, the joy of creation, which he portrayed as this great festival where everybody has a part, whether you're a juggler or a musician, we all have a part, and it was a beautiful place, from this to Masaccio's painting, where the their eyes just don't look all that happy to be open, do they? It's brutal. We go from Genesis 2, and they will be one flesh, to Marc Chagall's creation window, where man and woman, even though God has reached in and put the dove there, are facing not toward each other anymore, but they are facing away from each other after the fall. And next week, we're going to deal with the curse, particularly to the woman and to the man. What does it mean that your desire will be for your husband and he will rule over you? What does it mean that dust you are and to dust you will return? Next week, we're going to try to dive in and really grab what the effect of Adam and Eve now being separated. These two who were bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, are now this woman you gave me. And Linda gave me a hard time before the service today, as we were kind of practicing. She said, you really like that line. I said, you can get into this line, because really what Adam says is, that woman you gave me. What's he doing? He's blaming He's not just blaming the woman, he's blaming God. Yeah, he's blaming God. It's not just, I didn't do it. It's your fault, God. You gave me this woman. You deal with it. That's, man, that's cheeky. Next week, those last two parts of the curse, where are you? What was a recognition that the place Adam and Eve had in the garden was gone forever. And the relationship with each other, I will fix that. The relationship with each other, the relationship with creation, and the relationship with God was, I can't say forever, but at least for their lifetimes, changed. The fall. Fortunately, we have a God who is still in the seeking out business. And if I had to pick a New Testament reflection of Genesis 3:10, it would be Romans 5:8. For God demonstrates his love for us in this, that while we are still hiding from God, while we are still working really hard to try to make marriages and our relationship with this environment work, our creation work, while we are struggling with who I really am, while all these things are still broken, while I'm still hiding in the garden, and we have not progressed all that far beyond fig leaves, right? I mean, when it gets right down to it, we haven't got all that far from where Adam and Eve were. While we are still there, Christ died for us. We have a God who still comes down, breaks into this creation, and seeks those who are hiding from him. That's the good news. And there is a hint of this good news even in Genesis 3. When Linda read this passage, I got chills down my spine because I know the power of this verse. I will put enmity between you and the woman. My wife doesn't mind snakes, but almost everybody else I know hates snakes. Maybe this is the beginning of that. I'll put enmity between you and the woman, between your offspring and yours, and he, notice, offspring is a big picture, and he is a singular, right? Something really important is going on here. He will crush your head and you will strike his heel. We had this picture over the Advent season where we connected Eve and Mary together. Mary as the bearer of the eventual crusher. It wasn't going to be Eve's child who would crush Satan. It was going to be Mary's child who would crush Satan. That's what's going on in Genesis 3:15. As the offspring, he will crush Satan's head, and Satan, is going to do great damage to Jesus. And this is way more than just a foreshadowing of the spike going through Jesus' feet on the cross. This is a statement of our relationship with Satan as a part of Jesus' body today. That Satan is still in the, I would love to strike his heel wherever I can get it. And guess who Jesus' body is right here? There's a reason. There is a reason. It starts in Genesis 3:15. And from that first painful experience of Eve, when one of her children was killed, the battle between Satan's offspring and Eve's offspring was on. And history is more than a battle of the proletariat against the bourgeois. It's more than just the Hegelian synthesis of one side and the other. It is the fight between two kings, Satan who says, did God really say, and God who says, yes, I did say. That's the lens through which we read history. And this is part of that battle between those two rulers, God and the usurper. From Abraham being told to give up his son, and Chagall caught that it was between the tree of life and the cross that this happens. You can see them in his painting, the tree of life and the cross. From the slaughter of the innocents in Bethlehem, the battle has been between Satan and Eve's offspring, her seed, and so often it's about the children. The Czech Republic, after World War II, put this memorial to the children of war, the children who died in the war, outside a small city outside of Prague. It was the city that Hitler chose to retaliate against when one of his generals was killed by a partisan grenade just after the Nazis took control. And he chose this town, wiped it off the map, plowed up the streets, and even dug up the cemeteries. And most of the children died in concentration camps. It has been a battle between Satan and between Eve's offspring. This last week, the battle was driven home to me as governor of the state of New York suggested that they celebrate the decision to legalize late-term abortion in New York by lighting up the World Trade Center tower. This is off of a news account of that event. That same hour that this was on the news, Father Mel was leading the busload of us in a march at the Capitol. That's Father Mel right there getting ready to lead us in the rain. Father Mel, you can see he's got about 5 layers on, but it was nothing. Father Francis from Uganda, who was here for a friend's funeral, had about 15 layers on. He could not get warm. It was cold that day. As 3,000 gathered on the steps of the Capitol to bear witness that the battle between these two kingdoms still takes place in the realm of the children far too often. Some of you have seen this picture. That wasn't the first time I'd been at a march like that. That's my dad right there. He's got the 70s glasses down to a T. This has been a long battle for my family. This has been a long battle for the offspring of Eve and Satan. As time after time after time, Satan strikes out against the children. And time after time, God says, it's not quite yet time. But we know the whole story. We know that there came a time when God one more time stepped down from heaven to where the problem was, the garden where sin is. He stepped down one more time and did Satan in. That's the gospel story in Genesis chapter 3. This is Galatians 4, not Genesis 2. But when the time was just right, God sent his son, born of not just anybody, but born of a woman. I was riding back on the bus and with Father Mel. We had about an hour of quiet time, just the two of us. And he was, we were talking about organization, how we organize our churches, and it was fascinating. The issue of, they're dealing with, are they going to have women deacons and all these things? And he just looked at me and said, we honor Mary as the queen of heaven. And as the one who had a chance to bear that son, born of a woman, born under law, that is in a place where God's judgment still rests, that we might receive the full rights of children, that is the full rights of those for whom God is going to walk down and just like the father and the prodigal son, take the initiative and run after his children and invite them back in to his home to redeem us under the law that we might receive the full rights of being his children. The gospel in Genesis chapter 3. The God who still breaks in and calls sinners home. Father, thank you again for the incredible privilege of being your children. And thank you for allowing us to celebrate just a little bit of new creation reality right here. Thank you for those glimpses of the curse being reversed in our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. Would you stand with me?